Let's open to 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 4, and get back into the inspired story of David and Goliath. The Philistines have invaded the Valley of Elah, which was a grain production area. They're there to steal the stuff that belongs to the Israelis' hard work. And the Israeli army of Saul has come out to defend the Israelis against this invasion. Both armies are in the Valley of Elah, but are on opposite sides of this gully that runs down the bottom of the valley. This gully has been dug out by the winter rains that happen year after year after year. And strategically, it's just not a good idea to be the first ones to try to cross this ditch. So, after a while, the Philistines send forward their giant to offer a challenge of single combat. 1 Samuel 17:4 says, "There came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." That's 9.5 feet. "He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of that coat was 500 shekels of bronze." Something like 150 pounds or more. "He had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung beneath between his shoulders." That's his throwing instrument. "And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam." A spear is a jabbing instrument. "And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron." That's about 15 to 20 pounds. So, this guy is monstrous. He is proportionally strong and huge, and his armor is proportional to who he is, and his weapons are proportional to what he's capable of using. And his shield bearer went out before him, so he's got an assistant that is on standby to hand him his shield if he needs it. Verse 8. "He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel." So the way I picture it, and I've been to the Valley of Elah, I've been to the site of this battle, the way I picture it is, he comes out by himself down to the edge of the ditch and yells across a few hundred feet to the camp of the Israelis on the north side of the ditch. And this is what he yells. "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am not I a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." So he offers the idea of single combat settling this standoff. And as I was sharing at the very end of our lesson yesterday, this is all about spiritual stuff. The Philistines think that Dagon will empower Goliath to defeat any Israeli. While the Israelis are there saying that they represent He who is the God of the Israelis. And so the winner is going to be determined by whose God is the strongest. That's what this champion, Goliath, is suggesting. It's very similar to what we talked about when the Ark was captured by the Philistines in the days of Eli the priest and Samuel the prophet back in his younger years. And the Philistines put the Ark in their temple of Dagon at Gaza because they considered it to be a war trophy, that basically He who is was the captive of their god Dagon. But you remember what happened. In the middle of the night, God forced that idol to bow before the Ark. And so it was absolutely ironic that the Philistines think that this is going to be different this time around, that somehow they will be able to be empowered by Dagon to beat the Israelis. Verse 10, the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. All they can see is this monster of a man across from them. 9.5 feet tall, heavily armed. The biggest guy that they've got on their side is King Saul. Now, he's big. He's a little over 6 feet tall. The average Israeli is probably something in 5'8", 5'9", 5'10". Saul's probably 6'4", 6'5". Saul is a strong warrior. But think about it. This giant is 3 feet taller than him. So he is scared to death to go out there. There's nothing here indicating that they were putting their trust in God, which is why this goes on for 40 days. We'll find that out in a moment. Verse 12, shift the scene to about almost, I think, 18 or 19 miles to the east of where this is happening, to the city of Bethlehem. Now, David was the son of an Ephraimite of Bethlehem in Judah named Jesse, who had 8 sons. This is repeated material for us. In the days of Saul, the man was already old and advanced in years. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, the next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So that helps us, again, establish this concept that David is well below military age. David at this time is probably about 12. Military age is right around 20. So his 3 oldest brothers are probably young to mid-range 20. And they're with Saul. While David, who had been Saul's attendant at Gibeah Palace, he was returned back to his father's service when the Israelis went on this fight. Normally, David would have been in Saul's presence playing the harp for him or taking care of his weapons. But now he's at Bethlehem. And verse number 16, for 40 days the Philistine came forward and took his stand morning and evening. Now think about this. Don't let this just be some sort of Hollywood story. Think about the pragmatic stuff here, the real to life stuff. Israel knows that they've been invaded by the Philistines, as they have been invaded in the past. The Philistines are there to try to steal their stuff, take their grain. Saul and the army have gone out to defend them, and they're excited about that. But now there's a standoff, and it's been going on for weeks. 40 days is how long it will ultimately go on. So this is probably the talk of the town all through Judea, all through Benjamin, all through Dan, because all those regions are fairly close. They're less than a day's travel from where this is happening. And they're all wondering, is the battle going to be engaged today? Did the Israelis fight? Did they win? Did they lose? Are the Philistines coming my direction? Are they going back home? Did they get anything from our neighbors? Things like that is what is the talk of the town. And so Jesse eventually starts thinking about his boys that are in service to Saul. And he decides that they should probably have some supplies because they've been down there for 40 days. Well, it will be 40 days by the time David gets there. So verse 17, Jesse said to David, his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain. So a big basket full of parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also, take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their 1,000. See if your brothers are well and bring some token for them. So dad is concerned about the sons, and so he sends supplies, not just simply for them, but also some things for the unit, given to the commander of their thousand. Things that Jesse raises on his own. He has grain fields, he has flocks, so he has cheeses as well as grain. So he sends all that and says, "You go down, check on your brothers, and bring me back word how they're doing." Verse number 19. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the Valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Now they're not actively engaged in fight. They're basically just on opposite sides of this gully. David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the provisions and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. So he gets there just in time for kind of the morning saber rattling. Each side gets out and makes noise and basically challenges the other side, come on over here and get us. Because they want the other group to go down in the gully. They don't want to go in the gully themselves. Dangerous to be the first ones down into it. So David arrives just in time to see the beginning of the big shouting match between the two sides, and maybe a lot of banging on shields. David left the things in the charge of the keeper of the baggage, and he ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. And as he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words before. And David heard him. So this has been happening for the last 39 days. Each side kind of makes a lot of noises trying to get the other side to cross that gully and engage in true fight. The Philistine comes out and makes his challenge for combat by champions, combat by divine decision. And this time, David hears it. And he's shocked by what he sees because remember, David is a man after God's own heart. He trusts God. He believes in God. He lets God sing through him and he lets God fight through him in defense of the sheep. So this is what he saw and heard. Verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. So the big giant of a man, 9.5 feet tall, heavily armed, comes out and everybody in Israel kind of fades into the background. And this is kind of that stereotypical thing that you see with the military. You know, everybody's lined up in rank and somebody asks for a volunteer and everybody steps backwards, right? That's the joke because nobody wants to volunteer in the military for a death assignment. That's the concept that comes through in here. Nobody wants to be thought of as the volunteer for being the champion to go against this guy. The men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." So they're talking to each other, trying to convince each other, "You need to go. Go do it. Go fight the guy. You know what's going to happen. The guy that goes out there and beats him, King Saul says he gets to marry his daughter. So he gets to marry the princess. And he promises to declare that family tax exempt for the rest of their lives." Now that's a pretty big deal. Verse 26. David said to the men who stood by him, What's supposed to be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach for is from Israel?" So he's like, "What did you say? What did you say is going to be done for the guy that beats this man?" And then he says this. Now, keep in mind, he's about 12. These guys are all in their 20s, 30s, and older. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? How dare he get away with this? Who does this man think he is, trying to say that he'll take on God's people? And the people answered David in the same way, so it shall be done to the man who kills him. That is, he gets to marry the princess, and he gets to have his family declared tax exempt. Verse 28. Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard what he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "What have you come down? Or why have you come down? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you came down to see the battle." Now, I want you to remember, Eliab saw Samuel anoint David as the future king. He is well aware of that. But he can't get past this idea that David is his kid brother. Eliab is like 26, 27, something in that neighborhood. He's a veteran of a couple of different wars. And here's his snot-nosed kid brother acting like he knows what this is all about, what this is going to do. And he says, "I know what the deal is. You just think more about yourself than you ought to. You just came down here because you wanted to see what real warriors do. That's what it's all about." And David said back to him, "What have I done now? Wasn't just that a word?" And you can see the dynamic that's the same in so many families. The kid brother is like, "What? I didn't say anything out of order. I'm just asking a question here." And then he turned away from him toward another and spoke in the same way. And the people answered him again as before. Now, there's more than just David asking the question, trying to encourage some of these other guys to take on the fight. There seems to be this implication that David thinks, "You know what? I think I could do this. I think I could take this guy on." And that also might have something to do with why Eliab was so rough in his response to him, is that David thinks at 12 years of age, which is probably how old he is, that he can do this. So, verse 31, when the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. So King Saul finds out that his private musician, his special little singer, is in the camp, and that he's asking around about, well, if somebody beats this guy, what does he get? And so he brings him to the little royal tent and talks to him. David said to Saul, verse 32, "Let no man's heart fail because of you, or because of him. Your servant will go out and fight with this Philistine." So there it comes out. No more implication. Straight out. David says, "Sir, I'll take him. You don't need to worry about him anymore. I'll take him down." Now Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he's been a man of war from his youth. So David, you can't do it. You're a kid, and he is a highly skilled and well-seasoned veteran of fights since he was your age. He's been prepared for this day of battle a lot longer than you've been alive." But David said back to Saul, and this is where we get the stories that I told you earlier that Saul's assistants must have heard about, the things that happened once David came back from being anointed with that holy oil and the Holy Spirit of God was working through him. So here's the story. David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him. and I struck him, and I delivered it out of his mouth. So he's got two separate occasions at least in mind. One time when a lion came and grabbed up one of the lambs and ran off with it. And another time when a bear came and did the same thing. And this is what he says. Verse 36, your servant has struck down both lions and bears. Now he uses the plural there, so there must have been more than two occasions. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. So David says, God has been with me protecting my father's sheep. Some stupid lion came along, some stupid bear came along and tried to take it. I went after him and I took him down. Well, here is this man who is making fun of God and of God's people. How dare he? I will go out there and God will use me to take him down, just like he used me to take down the bear and the lion. Verse 37, David said, he who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And there was something in the fire of David that caused Saul to go along with it. Saul said to David, go, and he who is be with you. So he agrees, I'll let you represent Israel. And then Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail, and David strapped his sword over his armor, and he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. So David put them off. Now remember, Saul is bigger than the average Israeli. So why is it that Saul is trying to put his personal armor on this kid? And I can really only come to one conclusion. And that is that he hoped that it would look like he was out there fighting. Now that's ridiculous, because David's shorter than Saul, gotta be. I mean, he must only be about 12, maybe 13. And so he's not to his full adult size yet. He might be a big boy, but he's not Saul's height. So he can't wear this armor, no matter how much they try to fiddle-faddle with it to try to make it fit him. And besides, as David said, how am I supposed to move around in stuff that I've never used before? See, David may have had some training in armor already, you know, trying to get prepared to eventually be a soldier. But he's never worn this stuff. So it's unfamiliar with him, oversized for him, too heavy for him. And so he says, no, I'm going to just take it off. So he does. And he does this instead. Verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, so his shepherd's staff, and he chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. Now, what does that mean? That means that he went down into the gully. He walked out there, got down into the gully, which I've been in that gully in one of the places, and it was about 6 feet deep, I think, where I was at, and lots of limestone down in the bottom of it, pebbles and rocks of varying sizes. And so he went down into that from one side, from the Israeli side on the north, and sorted around until he found five smooth stones as ammunition for his sling. Now, don't think of the slingshot that I grew up when I was a kid, you know, the wrist rocket sort of thing that you pull back on the rubber bands and let fly. This is two straps of leather with a pouch between them. The pouch is big enough to take a stone that would be the size of something that you would cup in your palm of your hand. So we're not talking about a little tiny thing. We're talking about a pretty good sized rock. He was looking for something that would be smooth on all sides, maybe fairly spherical, because that'd be perfect for aerodynamic shape for flight. So you put the rock in the pouch, and you've got one of the straps that's secured in your hand. The other one you pinch between your fingers. You swing it around over your head till you get the centrifugal force that you want. And then at just the right moment, you let go of the strap that's pinched between your fingers, and that object starts taking a trajectory in the direction that you're targeting. And we know that slingers who are well-trained can hit objects with great precision and with a lot of force. The Benjamite army had a lot of left-handed slingers that were scary in their fighting ability. So David is well skilled in this thing as a shepherd boy. And so he gets his ammo. He's got five rocks. The typical way of talking about this is that he knew that there were five other giants that he would probably need to take care of. Maybe. It's a nice little story to go along with it. But honestly, we don't know for sure why he took five rocks, other than just making sure that he had plenty of ammo. So his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So that means he's now climbed up on the other side of the gully, and he's advancing southward toward the Philistine giant champion. And this is where we're going to have to cut off for the day. The Philistine moved forward, came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. So Goliath is insulted that the Israelis would send against him a kid. But he doesn't realize that this kid is coming with the power of God.